I've been loving you too long to stop now. You were tired and you want to be free. My love is growing stronger as you become a habit to me. Ooh, I'm loving you too long. I don't wanna stop now. Oh. With you, my life has been so wonderful. I can't stop now.
All right. The legendary Otis Redding, singer, songwriter, producer, arranger, and talent scout with I've Been Loving You Too Long. It's from his acclaimed 1965 album, Otis Blue. Otis sings soul. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and yeah, well, that's always an indication of where we're going today, talking about a relationship that really needs to be reexamined. The crushing Republican sweep of last year's elections was no fluke or luck of the draw. It was, in fact, political carnage. Democrats were looking to gain 5 seats to take back control of the U.S. Senate. They got just 2. They won only 6 House seats. Republicans have a 241. That's 241 seats compared with the Republicans, 194. Democrats needed 30 seats to retake control of the House. Instead, Republicans now enjoy a 256 to 194 majority. At the state level, Democrats got trounced. 28 Democratic governorships went down to 16. And with a majority in the Senate, they torpedoed President Obama's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they torpedoed even Obama himself, who was dropping hints, especially toward the end of the election. He was dropping hints that things might have gone better for his party if he were allowed to run for a third term. Of course, that just was not possible. The Democrats lost 1,042 seats during Obama's 2-term presidency. Well, we know that President Trump has started his term, and he has started it with a severely wounded Democratic Party, which can do practically no harm to him and his administration, not in the state that they're in. So once again, it falls to the people to fend for themselves. This is what I think. And it's the topic that we're going to share today, discuss in greater depth today. This issue we've discussed before, but now with the election over, we see how things have turned out. And so we should take a look at what should be done about this Democratic Party. Fix it or nix it? Many people listening to the Progressive Radio Network, and I presume also to this program, at one time might have been Democrats and may very well still be. So I'd be interested in your take on the Democratic Party. Why should we bother discussing the Democratic Party in the first place? For me personally, I quit about 20 years ago. I quit all political elections and whatnot about that time because I saw no point to it. The whole system of elections, in my view, was not going to help people, not the way it was organized, and it was likely to continue not helping the people for a foreseeable future, or at least until something else came along. As we also have discussed on the program, what came along is showing very disturbing signs of going down the old familiar rabbit hole. I'm referring specifically to the Green Party, which still has not explained what happened in the 2016 election. And it did not win any seats in the 2016 election. That is one thing. But what grieves me more about the party, of course, is that it is leaning, I think, in the same direction as the major parties. But in the end, that's our political experience. The two-party or the duopoly, the two-party system, comprising the Democrats and the Republicans. And look what we're seeing. We see a Democratic Party literally imploding over the last couple of years, unable and in some cases unwilling to engage the Republican Party in a way that benefits the people. They're tired, they're older, that ideas are tired. They seem not to have the energy anymore. They seem more concerned about retirement and the benefits that are coming to them. They're out of touch. And so you wonder, what is the point of being a Democrat today? And this has been happening for quite a while. I just indicated that in Barack Obama's term, and this was an administration that was so eagerly anticipated, people were just so pleased to revive their interest in the Democratic Party. And yet, in his 8 years in office, the net result was a loss of 1,042 seats. Now, that doesn't happen just by chance. Something is accounting for increased disinterest and disaffection with the Democratic Party. I am disaffected by the political parties that exist now. But still, there's a matter of pragmatism and practicality. We know, and we've already begun to see very, very awful signs from the Trump administration as to the direction President Trump is committed to going in. And it's not necessarily a good picture. It could be that, well, things might start off badly, but over the next 4 years, and he's talking about at least another four on top of that, the party would improve and he will become more human and more humane and start paying attention to people and maybe make a couple of turns from the path that he has chosen. And maybe over time, he may develop into a not so bad president. I'm not holding out to that hope. But we see in recent, well, a couple of weeks since he's been in office, not only his behavior, which is out of control, this is Trump, but we see the pathetic response of the Democratic Party. And it actually looks, from the kinds of behaviors we're seeing from people like Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters and others, you're wondering whether, you know, they're drinking some kind of strange water in Washington, D.C. The other day, Nancy Pelosi was giving at a news conference in which she was saying that, you know, you have to take on President Bush. So the people, the group she was with, a group of Democrats, were obviously stunned that she kept insisting this was a term of President Bush. And I listened to Maxine Waters. She's responding to a news inquiry on MSNBC. Her response was just so disjointed. You can't win with this Democratic team. You can't win anything. They're in bad shape, and they're deteriorating at a very fast rate. So can the Democratic Party be saved? Should it be saved? Is there something else that could work? Some kind of alternative political opposition? If so, what would it be? But it looks like for the next 4 years, there will be no real opposition to the Trump administration except opposition created by the people themselves. So I just don't see a cogent party response that would be effective or that is even on the horizon. What we've got now is just pitiful, absolutely pitiful. So we'll be talking about that today. Your calls at 888-874-4888. Am I reading this thing wrong? Is there some other dimension here that actually gives us a shot at a meaningful opposition, a true opposition to what's here already, which is essentially we have a one-party state, an autocratic one-party state. They have just trounced everybody. And that, too, is something that the Democratic Party has to account for. What accounts for the rapid deterioration of support in the Democratic Party? And why is it that their leadership has come to a point where it is practically preferable to have no leadership there at all? Because what they're doing is making matters so much worse. 888-874-4888. Let's start in Connecticut with Gabriel.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you, Latrice?
Hi, how are you?
Great. I'm glad you're doing well. I understand that you're not located in the New York City area anymore. Are you in the New York City or New York State area?
No, I'm in Florida.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so they actually had a podcast equipment sent down there for you to have a complete and succinct, clearly a very professional broadcast. I commend you for that.
Thank you.
And you're not in a snowstorm or whatever they call it.
Yes, I understand New York City and environs around the immediate area was experiencing a heavy snowfall today.
Right. I want to get on the topic at hand, if I may.
Sure.
You definitely put yourself in a situation of you are entertaining the notion of any type of devotion or any type of allegiance or making the fragments of a broken system, a broken political system at that, to bear on the American people. That being said, the challenge is not to entertain amending the political duopoly. The challenge is not to maintain or to heal or to improve or to salvage the Democratic Party or even the Republican Party. The challenge is to deconstruct what already exists. The challenge is just to move on beyond the Democratic Party and form another party, the suggestions of the Green Party, Libertarian Party, or some other party. I remember at the time, I do remember in history, before the 1933s and 1940s, there were multiple different parties hedging their way and hedging their lobbying efforts for political power, for political positions and seats of Congress and seats of the Senate and locally before 1933s and 1940s. It's deliberately designed by corporations. Take your pick. The Ford Corporation for oil, the petrodollar, GE, transatlantic corporations, the banking elite, the oligarchs of the Wells Fargo's of the world, the Credit Suisse of the world, the Goldman Sachs of the world, to continue to have this illusion of the people who are voting, the illusion of people voting that there is a choice when there is not.
I hear you, but I also say that we had evidence, or we have evidence, that in that same time period, we had a very active left of center movement, several of them, that spawned the creation of many of these parties that were labor-related, ideologically, neither capitalist nor financed by the corporate sector, but were true grassroots movements. And the Democrats and Republicans, and I think you're right, too, in pointing to the role of the corporate elite, saw to it that they were smashed. And these movements also self-imploded. So we have a concatenation of issues here, all aimed at narrowing the choice and maintaining the duopoly, despite all kinds of efforts to give people political choices. So out of that system came the dominance of the duopoly. Since then, it's been the Democrats and the Republicans. And I think with the other parties, the smaller parties, I think part of the problem was that they didn't understand how to construct, or they failed to construct, a true alternative. Their construction of an alternative, it seems to me, was largely ideological. But that's not what wins elections. The people want to feel that, at least, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, I think people in all elections, they want to be satisfied with the feeling that the political party they're supporting in turn supports them, wherever they are on the political or ideological spectrum, is second to the idea of feeling comfortable that should these parties be elected, that they as citizens are in safe hands. But we haven't had that feeling for a long time. Have you felt comfortable with the alternative parties, not from an ideological view, because obviously you will be supporting them because you see some kind of commonality with their professed ideologies. But outside of that, don't you also want to feel that the parties are competent, that they're well run, that they have many ways that they can meet people's needs, genuinely connecting with them, and giving a sense of comfort with their leadership?
From what I understand, what's currently taking place is that the comfort zone, or the feeling of comfort zone beyond political ideology, is not there. And what resonates with me is that we have an influx or a discombobulation of sorts in the political climate now, which is a good thing. I think it's very good, because those who are intelligent enough can see that you may be a rehabilitated redneck. You may be a keyboard commando. You may be a leftist. You may be a women's right activist. You may be a Black Lives Matter affiliate. But I see that there are several several inroads and commonalities among all those groups I just mentioned. The problem is this. We have a toxic, very, very contemptuous and repugnant media network that broadcasts dissension, confusion, animosity against all these different fractions. And yes, the political climate is such where you feel insecure, fearful, but that's the whole point. It's designed to make people feel fearful, uncertain, unsettled, because that's all there is. But if someone who has the imagination and the inspiration and the wherewithal and the intelligence to understand that they can take and eradicate the existing model of the political duopoly, it's only a fiction of reality. Money in the media and the press drives it. Once you take the money, the media, and the press out of it, the so-called fiction of duopoly can be eradicated and replaced.
All right, let me ask you, were you ever at any time affiliated with the Democratic Party or supported the Democratic Party?
I've been affiliated with two parties, actually three. I'm currently in the pool of the Green Party now.
Okay. So here's the question. The parties that you were affiliated with, any of them included a majority party? I'm using the term quite loosely here.
Oh, of course. And that's the problem. It was a delusion of inclusion, if I can use that word.
Okay. So when you were could you compare when you were a member, I'm assuming it's probably the Democratic Party at one point. When you were affiliated with this majority party, before you made your switch, based on the experience that you have from being a member of a majority party, what do you see that a party is now?
Okay, now I see the party as being a hodgepodge or a chuck full of nuts of different special interest groups who have, for better or less, have positioned themselves and piggybacked off of, let's say, the civil rights movement or the women's movement of the 60s and 70s. And then once they piggybacked off those movements, these particular interest groups or even ethnic groups in the Democratic Party have literally leapfrogged over these different progressive mindful movements into broadcasting and implementing their own agenda. The Democratic Party right now is a toxic, just as toxic as the Republican Party. It's one side of one double-edged sword of striking down any freedom of the press, any freedom of our rights, and jeopardizing our citizenship. The Democratic Party.
Do you see any difference with the Green Party?
Yes, I would have to say, because everyone comes from a different separate background of their heritage, their lineage, and their ideological point of view and religion. I come from a heritage of Irish American indentured servants and indigenous Moorish African roots. So I have, I'm a mutt, pretty much, of Indian African descent and Irish indigenous roots. And I would have to say that we, as human beings and citizens, we bring that into the fold. And I see that there is no there's no improvement or no advancements to be made in either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party at this time. They have failed miserably for generations upon generations. The worst blow, one of the worst blows, was when Bernie Sanders, in one sentence, handed 11 of 15 million voters that he received, and he disappointed all these voters and stabbed them in the back and handed them over to Hillary Clinton.
Well, by the way, she's gearing up for a run in 2020, and it seems from what she has said that she will be creating her niche among white women. She's already declared the future is female, and you read under that, the future is white and female. All right. Well, thank you. You got us off to a great start today. I sincerely appreciate your contribution. Thank you, Gabriel. From Mount Vernon, Lincoln, what is your view about whether the Democratic Party should be saved or it should be sunk?
It should be sunk.
Why?
Okay. Politics is not about intellectual gymnastics. Politics is really very simple. In order for us to succeed in politics, we have to remove all the abstract slogans and terminologies, such as progressives, liberals, conservatives, etc. We'd have to step away from even talking about Marxism, etc., Leninism, you know. Politics is simple. But what happened is we have been approaching politics like people going to church. They go to church every Sunday or whatever day, and it's a feel-good thing. And then they leave. You have people working at McDonald's for years, and they go to church, and they give the preacher the money. The preacher gets richer, just like the politicians, because the preachers and the politicians are synonymous. And then the people, they felt good, but when they came home, they came home to shambles. They came home back to their little McDonald's job or whatever. And all that they thought that they went there to achieve, they did not achieve. The purpose of politics is for the good
of the people. We're not talking about the purpose of politics. We're talking about very, very concentrated here today for a particular purpose, because we saw the performance and lack thereof of both main parties, one of which, of course, is the Republicans. They're in charge. The Democrats are having a really hard time maintaining momentum. They lost it several years ago. So the question, especially since so many people have ascribed to the Democratic Party all these ideals, it should be the case that the Democratic Party is supposed to be doing really, really well, but it doesn't look like it. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't sound like it. What would you recommend? You said already, sink it. The Democratic Party really should be sunk and be done with. What do you recommend that people would do? Because they have to figure out for themselves now the best ways they can protect themselves. The Democratic Party can't do it anymore. It's done. I talked about that for quite a while. The Democratic Party is really at this point unable to deliver any kind of protection for these millions of people who have been supporting it all these years. So it's imploded. What's next in your view?
So it is what I was coming to, because what is next is predicated on what I was saying. Because if we don't understand what I was saying, then it is all futility. Okay.
What I'm trying to encourage you to do today is less hypothetical. Give us a specific thing that you see.
And that's what I am about to do.
Okay.
I'm trying to say to you, okay, first of all, the people, that's why I said before we have to get rid of the abstracts and the slogans, etc. The answer is very simple, and the answer is we must come up with a platform, a mandate, and it should say that any party, whether it be Green or whoever, if we're going to organize a party, this is the platform it's going to be based on. It's going to be based on being truly managed and run by the people. The people are going to be the ones determining everything. And the people's need is going to be put first. The platform on which this party will be designed, it will be about sustainability of the people. It is going to be designed on everyone being guaranteed food, clothing, shelter, etc., just like the human body. You know, when you go to eat, you, for nutrition, you make sure that you consume something that is going to feed the entire body. And the population, the community, is just like a body. So I'm saying
where in the world right now, if I could ask you this, Lincoln, where in the world right now would such a government or a reasonable facsimile be?
We had glimpses of that with the Gaddafi government and with Fidel Castro's government. So what I'm saying is to take those two examples to another level. Like, you see, when we talk about economics is false. It's erroneous. It's a make-believe. It's just like this monetary system is all fake. Money is not real. Money is an abstract thing. And one of the problems we've been having is that when we vote for whether it be Republicans or Democrats, and we go to school and we get these degrees in economics and political science, it's all garbage. And we pretend that our little PhDs, etc., is doing anything. All the PhDs they have not stopped the wars. All the law school they graduate from did not stop the drone strikes. None of those things stopped the people from being hungry or from having health care. And what I'm saying is what we continue to do is get lost in make-believe intellectualism and gymnastics when it's very simple. So what I'm saying is we need to design a party, let the Green Party, and we the people come and say, look, the Green Party, it must, or whatever party we're going to call it, you must work for universal health care. Everyone must be guaranteed a certain amount of money to make sure that they don't fall in the cracks, etc. So in other words, the minds of the people, we the people are part of the problem, because what we do, just a good example is Jamaica. Every election season, they all go out and vote for Labour or PNP, and none of them deliver. The homelessness didn't stop. Poverty didn't stop, hunger didn't stop, crimes didn't stop, wars didn't stop. And I'm saying that that's what's the problem in America. And we pretend that we're something special. Like I hear people talking about the IQ of Obama or Clinton. What is that doing for the people who are hungry? And I'm saying we need to get away from that and design something concrete. All this talk about Democrats and Republicans is not concrete. It's not saying this is what we're going to do. And this, we're not talking about politicians' legacy, etc. What does that have to do with feeding people?
Well, I understand your point. I'm just saying we also live in a real world that has, in terms of its politics, has had a particular formula in play for a long, long time, since there was an official Republican Party and an official Democratic Party. All right. So people are enculturated in a particular way to accept this as our political system. It is not likely that you could switch that off and then switch another system on just with the snap of your fingers. It will take some time. So
yes, it will.
While many of the things that you just pointed out are very desirable, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to even happen in the next 10 years. So if you were to design some way, something, a pragmatic way of, you know, calling this Democratic Party and the Republican Party as well into some kind of accountability that involves people's actions, what would that be? What would it look like? What is a practical and pragmatic way to take a shortcut, as just like in a medical situation, you have to stop the bleeding first and tend to the other stuff later? But there's a hemorrhaging going on. How do you stop the bleeding and begin to work toward putting something else different in?
We could stop it by this. We could mobilize mass boycott. And when I say boycott, I'm talking about boycott both the Democratic Party and the Republican. Shut down the country and let it be not be about women's rights or black people, but everybody's rights. And we say, look, man, both of you have not produced. And we're going to shut you down, the military, everything, because if the civilians do not support the system, military, nothing will work. And so we, the people, have to change our minds, and we have to come together as one and boycott for our cause, for the cause of everyone. And why the Democrat, why it will not work, or why, is because of the mindset of America. We are still in this individualistic American dream state of mind. And yes, there might be a few people who are supporting the Green Party, even those people who were supporting Bernie Sanders, etc. It was nothing substantial they were supporting. That was another little make-believe war. They weren't supporting anything about making sure that the poor are fed. Bernie Sanders wasn't saying anything. But we are scared to admit these truths because we want to pretend that we are smart and we're intellectual.
But to be fair, Bernie Sanders did address the issue of poverty. Hello? He did address the issue of hunger in the United States. He did address the issue of inequality, racial inequality, economic equality. He was very much on point on these issues.
But he didn't offer how to solve these things.
Well, in part he did. He talked about, for example, a guaranteed living wage. He talked about people getting more support in social services that would keep their families intact. That poverty should not mean automatic death in this country. He talked about these things. But he absolutely blew everything that he was talking about by betraying the movement that was growing under his direction or under his leadership, and of course became an acolyte of the Democratic Party and of Hillary Clinton. Thanks so much for your input today. Really appreciate
it. Okay.
New York, Patricia, you are on the air.
Oh, good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you.
The last time I spoke, I was on my way to Cuba during the mourning period for Fidel.
Yes.
And, it's really interesting. As you know, I have shared before that I was a lifelong Democrat. But in the last 15 years, I've voted quite sparsely on the ballots because I would vote for those individuals who had a platform that was consistent with my own thinking. But something interesting happened. As you know, I like to call in on these Sunday shows on the radio. And this past Sunday, you know, there's a primary station here in New York on Sundays that have a call-in show. And since the election, one of the individuals on the show has repeatedly said that the reason Hillary lost was all the Bernie Sanders people who either didn't vote or voted for a third-party candidate. And I really got tired of hearing that. So I called in, and I shared with him that I voted for a third-party candidate unapologetically. And I said, because there was no difference between Hillary or Donald. They were vying to see who could be the top oligarch. And with no concern for the people. And so it just so happened that on the show on Sunday was a candidate from Wisconsin who is running in a special election. I don't even remember his name. But the point was he was representing the Democratic Party. And, you know, as I shared with the listening audience on that show, why the Democrats had failed in the election, I was pounced upon. I didn't understand. I was being naive. My point here is that as long as we have a populace that truly does not understand, because the Democrats right now are saying that they're gearing up for the 2018 elections, and that they're going to really, between now and 2018, you know, show people why Donald Trump was such a bad person. And I wanted to share with them, it's not Donald. because, as you say, Hillary is gearing up for 2020. Well, not only is Hillary gearing up for 2020, but what Chelsea is now going to do is move from Manhattan to, she has purchased a house next to her house in Chappaqua, so that Chelsea can move from Manhattan to Chappaqua to take the seat of the Liz Krueger, who is retiring, so that Chelsea can now gain residency in Chappaqua so that she can now run for the seat. And so people do not understand that capitalism breeds contempt for people. It is me, 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 my, how much I can get. And until capitalism is eradicated, where there is no longer a profit motive, where the people become the central point, which is what I see in Cuba every time I go, then people will constantly be voting against their self-interest. So it matters, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the individuals, they do not matter.
Even so, and I agree with everything you just said, but even so, what does that mean for the immediate future in terms of political choices for the average people out here?
We're between a rock and a hard place. And what we're going to have to begin to do is just go back to basics. So here in New York, there's going to be a special election in the 9th District. And all these people do is they play musical chairs. So they go, if they're term limited in the city council, they run for a state office. When they become term limited in the state office, they run for the city council. And all they do is play musical chairs, and nobody benefits. And so we're really going to have to go back to basics and look for homegrown people in our neighborhoods, in our communities, who have already demonstrated their love for the people. Now, there's a risk to that. There's a risk to that. Look at Cynthia McKinney in Georgia. There is a risk to that. But people have to be willing to step up and take the risk.
Well, I know if the Democratic Party, if a couple of people have come out of the comas that they've been in for so long, they should be able to read the political landscape. And the landscape says people are just tired. They're tired of the Republicans. They're tired of the Democrats. And this is why I've been saying for some time, this is where the alternative parties should be this should be their shining hour. This is when they needed to be in all the nooks and crannies that they can find and connect with people. This is when their organization skills should be at their finest. But instead, we see that they have retreated too.
There is a void. You're absolutely correct. This is the time for them to fill the void that exists, and they're just not they're not successful at it at the moment, and I don't understand why.
I think people just got tired. You know, as I said before, losing repeatedly becomes an anesthetic. You know, you turn people off. You give them reason to believe that there is no credible party out there, because people have been losing and losing and losing. Who now wants to join yet another cycle of political losses? So all the way around, we see all these self-annihilating things that the parties have been doing. But the bigger parties could survive it because they have access to money. They can buy loyalty. They can buy advertising. They can buy interest in the public. The small parties can't do that. And yet, they are more, in my view, they are better situated to mount an organization campaign than the bigger parties are, because people are really, really turned off by the Republicans and the Democrats alike. And they would welcome, this is a time, the Green Party, the Workers' Socialist Parties, all these other parties that could make a difference, if not nationally, they should set their sights on local and statewide races. You know, the Green Party, I think, frittered away a great opportunity where they invested so heavily and for no logical reason. I mean, the numbers didn't say that they had a good chance of landing the presidency. They never had a good chance of landing the presidency. So the tactic should have been concentrate on local and statewide races and direct your initial organizational efforts there. I mean, you didn't even get 1% of the vote in the national race. Why are you therefore expending all this effort and energy and resources chasing after something you know? You have a mathematical history that tells you you don't stand a chance winning the presidency. So why are you bothering with that? Be smarter and consolidate your efforts where you stand a better chance of landing something. So it's a lot of crazy thinking going on. And no matter where it's coming from, the one thing that seems to unite them all is that they don't have to pay attention to what the people are thinking. They're not interested.
They're not interested.
Nope. Because they have all the brains. They're very smart.
Yeah,
they have a lot of people with PhDs.
And that was exactly the response that I got on Sunday, that I just didn't understand. I was being naive.
We need more naivete, the kind that you have. I like your kind of naivete. So I would encourage everybody to play this over and over, share this particular section of the program today, and become very active proponents of political naivete. That's what we need. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Thank
by
you
the
know.
Way, how was your trip to Cuba?
It was wonderful. It was just amazing to see the outpouring of love and adoration that the Cuban people had for Fidel. It was just amazing.
Yeah. I know how that is. I have several Cuban friends, Afro-Cubans particularly, and I mean, it's like Castro was their grandfather or something, you know, like he was right there in the house with them. And these are the considerations that they carried all throughout the day. How am I doing with my neighbors? You know, this is a kind of concern that it wasn't an individual way of thinking throughout the day. It was always a collective kind of thinking.
Well, you know what I saw? Fidel was a very people person. He loved the people, which is different from Raul. Raul is a bit reserved. I would characterize Fidel as the intellectual and Raul as the enforcer. And so across Cuba, everywhere you went, people had written across their foreheads, banners outside of their homes, Yo soy Fidel, I am Fidel. Mm-hmm. And so at first glance, you know, people were concerned that the people would forget his teachings. It's not going to happen. It's
no,
internalized.
No.
It's so internalized. It's not going to happen. No. Fidel lives on in those people forever.
And that is a common trait all over the world, where people get that message that their leadership is absolutely devoted to their well-being and welfare. You have it with Che, you know, selfless leadership. And people recognize that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain parts of the world you cannot, not if you value your life, you cannot say a bad thing about a person, even if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You dare not say that because on balance, the people think this person has been an extraordinary servant of the people. And they protect that person's reputation and legacy and work. It's a wonderful thing to witness when it happens.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for contributing today, Patricia.
Thank really you.
Really appreciate your call. Let's go to David from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Yes, Eutrice, thank you so much for being the great person you are. I'm going to get
you obviously have not spoken to my relatives.
Hello? Hello? Hello, you hear me?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
All right, very good. I want to talk about what I see is a situation where we have the masses of people believing that the duopoly that we have, Republican and Democrat, is just the system and the way it is in perpetuity. And you have a perpetual system of Republican and Democrat. And that's something that is, you know, formed in stone, and that's the way it is. Now, for me, I believe that what you have said before about working on local level and working there where you have a chance of winning something is wonderful, and I would do that also. However, I think it's important to, in a very redundant sort of way, get the information out who these people in political office work for and have people understand that this is no democracy. And those people in office do not work for the good of the people that live here. They work for the oligarchy and their friends. So one thing I would do is anybody that makes a political speech has to have a board next to him showing where he got the donations for his campaign. Everybody has to show his donations every time he makes a speech or appears in the media on television and let people know where he got the money. So that's another thing that could be done. I don't believe there's any possibility of reforming those two parties. It cannot be done. It has to be a situation where, let's say, new parties are there. There's no way that you can reform Democrat or Republican to be parties that serve the interests of the masses of people who live in this country. I mean, it's just impossible. And people have to get that through their head. I mean, it's something that's basic. There's no way that these people are going to give up their hegemony of the political system here in this country.
Well, let's bring this to the present, right now. The Democratic Amen. Party is, you could just kind of write them off for several more months, if not years. They don't have the capacity, nor do they have even the energy to maintain a sustained campaign in behalf of the constituency that historically has supported it. So we see that happening. It's for all intents and purposes, if it has any chance at all of surviving, it will be because they literally have had to shut down, do nothing else but reconstituting themselves, which means you could guarantee after Trump, more Trump and more Trump-like Trumps coming along on the Republican side.
Yes.
What would you say now? What can people do now? What direction should be taken now that could at least blunt the totality of this onslaught that the Republicans have inflicted on the entire nation?
Well, you see, people have to come to their senses. I've talked to a lot of people, like the previous caller talked about, who, when you say things like not supporting the Democratic Party, you must be losing your mind. And we have to convince people that following along with the Democrats or trying to reform them, there's no possibility of doing that. And we have to do something else to do things on a very local level that has a chance of success. And along with other tactics, like I mentioned about finding out who supports these politicians and doing things like running boycotts against their industries if they're one of the capitalist class people that support these candidates, and doing a boycott against them and selectively targeting people that support the Democrat or Republican Party and not in harmony with the type of program that we need to benefit the people, the masses of people that live in the country. So that would be my suggestion of how to do this. But I think it hasn't been done yet, but making people show who gives them the money publicly, and that would be a first step, one of the first steps that would help in terms of defeating this idea that we have to have this duopoly, and this duopoly is permanently in place. We have to understand that there's no future in the duopoly.
There is no future. I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And part of my fantasy is that at some point, the parties, the smaller parties, kind of coalesce and become the official opposition party in the United States. I could see right away where they would run into some trouble because some people believe this and some people believe that. But if everybody in these small parties that so far have spent literally their lifetime struggling, if they can kind of strike an accord that the ideology is not what really matters at first, what matters first is organizing people. And then you could always pound out some kind of a working agreement, but you will be in agreement that you're going up against a deeply entrenched system, but you are committed to doing that in service to the people. I think that's a reasonable approach as well, and they should explore.
I believe I'm talking now to the people who, for example, support the Democrat Party. Many people have said things like, oh, the Democrats, oh, they're for the people, and oh, they're for labor and that sort of thing. And look at what Franklin Roosevelt did during the Great Depression when he created these social programs. And they have no understanding that he was doing things in that particular case to save the next of the big capitalists for any possibility of a revolt. So they have to understand that the capitalists that control the Republicans and Democrats will give up things now and then. They will
but
give
we
up
we also
things,
have but, in Roosevelt's example, we also have, it's very seldom discussed that way, that America at that time was actually saved by the socialist programs also. You know, those were socialist programs.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for calling. We are at the end of our program today. Very exhilarating. I thank you, as always, for bringing the best of your ideas for us to inspect and share. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me hear from you about what you think about the program. I certainly think it a great pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company Monday through Friday. Thanks. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. I don't want to stop.